Side 4. The Gods Themselves. Continuing on page 132. Carefully he slipped away, trying to adopt a more seemly union without making it seem he was repulsing her. "Come," he said, "I've been waiting for you. Tell me what you want to know. I will explain all I can." They were moving quickly homeward now, with Odin adapting himself eagerly to the characteristic waver of the emotional flow. Jua said, "Tell me about the other universe. Why are they different? How are they different? Tell me all about it." It did not occur to Jua she was asking too much. It did occur to Odin. He felt rich with an astonishing quantity of knowledge and was on the point of asking, "How do you come to know enough about the other universe to grow so curious about it?" He repressed the question. Jua was coming from the direction of the hard caverns. Perhaps Lawston had been talking to her, suspecting that despite everything, Odin would be too proud of his status to help his middling. Not so, thought Odin gravely, and he would not ask. He would just explain. Trit bustled about them when they returned home. "If you two are going to talk, go into Dua's chamber. I will be busy out here. I must see to it that the children are cleaned and exercised. No time for melting now. No melting." Neither Odin nor Dua had any thought of melting, but there was no thought in either mind of disobeying the command. The parental's home was his castle. The rational had his hard caverns below, and the emotional her meeting places above. The parental had only his home. Odin therefore said, "Yes, Trit, we'll be out of your way." And Dua extended a briefly loving part of herself and said, "It's good to see you right here." Odin wondered if her gesture were part relief over the fact that there would be no pressure to melt. Trit did tend to overdo that a bit, even more than parentals generally. In her chamber, Dua stared at her private feeding place. Ordinarily, she ignored it. It had been Odin's idea. He knew that such things did exist, and, as he explained to Trit, if Dua did not like to swarm with the other emotionals, it was perfectly possible to lead solar energy down into the cavern, so that Dua might feed there. Trit had been horrified. It wasn't done. The others would laugh. The triad would be disgraced. Why didn't Dua behave as she should? "Yes, Trit," Odin had said, "but she doesn't behave as she should, so why not accommodate her? Is it so terrible? She will eat privately, gain substance, make us happier, become happier herself, and maybe learn to swarm in the end." Trit allowed it, and even Dua allowed it, after some argument, but insisted that it be a simple design. So there was nothing but the two rods that served as electrodes, powered by solar energy, and with room for Dua in between. Dua rarely used it, but this time she stared at it and said, "Trit has decorated it, unless you did, Odin." "I? Of course not." A pattern of colored clay designs was at the base of each electrode. "I suppose it's his way of saying he wishes I would use it," Dua said, "and I am hungry. Besides, if I'm eating, Trit wouldn't dream of interrupting us, would he?" "No," said Odin gravely. "Trit would stop the world if he thought its motion might disturb you while you were eating." Dua said, "Well, I am hungry." Odin caught a trace of guilt in her. Guilt over Trit? Over being hungry? Why should Dua feel guilty about being hungry? Or had she done something that had consumed energy, and was she feeling... He wrenched his mind away from that impatiently. There were times when a rational could be too rational and chase down the tracks of every thought to the detriment of what was important. Right now, it was important to talk to Dua. She seated herself between the electrodes, and when she compressed herself to do so, her small size was only too painfully evident. Odin was hungry himself. He could tell because the electrodes seemed brighter than they ordinarily did, and he could taste the food even at that distance, and the savor was delicious. When one was hungry, one always tasted food more keenly than otherwise, and at a greater distance. But he would eat later. Dua said, "Don't just sit silently, Left Ear. Tell me. I want to know." She had adopted, unconsciously, the ovoid character of a rational, as though to make it clearer that she wanted to be accepted as one. Odin said, "I can't explain it all the science, I mean, because you haven't had the background. I will try to make it simple, and you just listen. Later, you tell me what you didn't understand, and I'll try to explain further. You understand, first, that everything is made up of tiny particles called atoms, and that these are made up of still tinier subatomic particles." "Yes, yes," said Dua, "that's why we can melt." "Exactly. Because actually we are mostly empty space. All the particles are far apart, and your particles and mine and Trip's can all melt together because each set fits into the empty spaces around the other set. The reason matter doesn't fly apart altogether is that the tiny particles do manage to cling together across the space that separates them. There are attractive forces holding them together, the strongest being one we call the nuclear force. It holds the chief subatomic particles very tightly together in bunches that are spread widely apart and that are held together by weaker forces. Do you understand that?"
"Only a little bit," said Dua.
"Well, never mind. We can go back later. Matter can exist in different states. It can be especially spread out, as in emotionals, as in you, Dua. It can be a little less spread out, as in rationals and in parentals. Or still less so, as in rock. It can be very compressed or thick, as in the hard ones. That's why they're hard. They are filled with particles."
"You mean there's no empty space in them?"
"No, that's not quite what I mean," said Odin, puzzled as to how to make matter clearer. "They still have a great deal of empty space, but not as much as we do. Particles need a certain amount of empty space, and if all they have is that much, then other particles can't squeeze in. If particles are forced in, there is pain. That's why the hard ones don't like to be touched by us. We soft ones have more space between the particles than are actually needed, so other particles can fit in." Dua didn't look at all certain about that. Odin hastened onward. "In the other universe, the rules are different. The nuclear force isn't as strong as in ours. That means the particles need more room."
"Why?"
Odin shook his head. Because the particles spread out their waveforms more. I can't explain better than that. With a weaker nuclear force, the particles need more room, and two pieces of matter can't melt together as easily as they can in our universe."
"Can we see the other universe?"
"Oh no, that isn't possible. We can deduce its nature from its basic laws. The hard ones can do a great many things, though. We can send material across and get material from them. We can study their material, you see, and we can set up the positron pump. You know about that, don't you?"
"Well, you've told me we get energy out of it. I didn't know there was a different universe involved. What is the other universe like? Do they have stars and worlds the way we do?"
"That's an excellent question, Dua." Odin was enjoying his role as teacher more intensely than usual now that he had official encouragement to speak. Earlier, he always had the feeling that there was a kind of sneaking perversion in trying to explain things to an emotional. He said, "We can't see the other universe, but we can calculate what it must be like from its laws. You see, what makes the stars shine is the gradual combination of simple particle combinations into more complicated ones. We call it nuclear fusion."
"Do they have that in the other universe?"
"Yes, but because the nuclear force is weaker, fusion is much slower. This means that the stars must be much, much bigger in the other universe, otherwise not enough fusion would take place to make them shine. Stars of the other universe that were no bigger than our sun would be cold and dead. On the other hand, if stars in our universe were bigger than they are, the amount of fusion would be so great it would blow them up. That means that in our universe,
there must be thousands of times as many small stars as there are larger stars in theirs.
We only have 7, began Dua. Then she said, I forgot.
Odine smiled indulgently. It was so easy to forget the uncounted stars that could not be seen except by special instruments.
That's all right. You don't mind my boring you with all this?
You're not boring me, said Dua. I love it. It even makes food taste so good.
And she wavered between the electrodes with a kind of luxurious tremor.
Odine, who had never before heard Dua say anything complimentary about food, was greatly heartened. He said, Of course, our universe doesn't last as long as theirs. Fusion goes so fast that all the particles are combined after a million lifetimes.
But there are so many other stars.
Ah, but you see, they're all going at once. The whole universe is dying down. In the other universe, with so many fewer and larger stars, the fusion goes so slowly that the stars last thousands and millions of times as long as ours. It's hard to compare, because it may be that time goes at different rates in the two universes. He added with some reluctance, I don't understand that part myself. That's part of the Estwald theory, and I haven't got to that very much so far.
Did Estwald work out all of this?
A great deal of it.
Dua said, It's wonderful that we're getting the food from the other universe then. I mean, it doesn't matter if our sun dies out then. We can get all the food we want from the other universe.
That's right.
But does nothing bad happen? I have the feeling that something bad happens.
Well, said Odine, we transfer matter back and forth to make the positron pump, and that means the universe is mixed together a little. Our nuclear force gets a tiny bit weaker, so fusion in our sun slows up a little, and the sun cools down a little faster. But just a little, and we don't need it anymore anyway.
That's not the something bad feeling I have. If the nuclear force gets a tiny bit weaker, then the atoms take up more room, is that right? And then what happens to melting?
That gets a tiny bit harder, but it would take many millions of lifetimes before it would get noticeably harder to melt.
Even if someday melting became impossible and soft ones died out, that would happen long, long after we would all have died out for lack of food if we weren't using the other universe.
That's still not the something bad feeling. Dua's words were beginning to slur. She wriggled between her electrodes, and to Odin's gratified eyes, she seemed noticeably larger and compacter. It was as though his words, as well as the food, were nourishing her. Losten was right. Education made her more nearly satisfied with life. Odin could sense a kind of sensual joy in Dua that he had scarcely ever felt before. She said,
It is so kind of you to explain, Odine. You are a good leftling.
Do you want me to go on? Asked Odine, flattered and more pleased than he could easily say.
Is there anything else you want to ask?
A great deal, Odine, but not now.
Not now, Odine.
Oh, Odine, do you know what I want to do? Odine guessed at once, but was too cautious to say it openly. Dua's moments of erotic advance were too few to creep with anything but care. He hoped desperately that Crit had not involved himself with the children to the point where they could not take advantage of this. But Crit was in the chamber already.
Had he been outside the door, waiting?
He did not care. There was no time to think. Dua had flowed out from between the electrodes, and Odin's senses were filled with her beauty. She was between them now, and through her Trit shimmered, with his outlines flaming in incredible color. It had never been like this. Never. Odin held himself back desperately, letting his own substance flow through Dua and into Trit an atom at a time, holding away from the overpowering penetrance of Dua with every bit of strength, not giving himself up to the ecstasy, but letting it be wrenched from him, hanging on to his consciousness to the last possible moment, and then blanking out in one final transport so intense as to feel like an explosion echoing and reverberating endlessly within him. Never in the lifetime of the triad had the period of melt unconsciousness lasted so long. 3C. Trit was pleased. The melting had been so satisfactory. All previous occasions seemed skimpy and hollow in comparison. He was utterly delighted with what had happened. Yet he kept quiet. He felt it better not to speak. Odin and Dua were happy, too. Trit could tell. Even the children seemed to be glowing. But Trit was happiest of all, naturally. He listened to Odin and Dua talk. He understood none of it, but that didn't matter. He didn't mind that they seemed so pleased with each other. He had his own pleasure, and was content to listen. Dua said on one occasion, "And do they really try to communicate with us?" Trit never got it quite clear who they might be. He gathered that communicate was a fancy word for talk. So why didn't they say talk? Sometimes he wondered if he should interrupt. But if he asked questions, Odin would only say, "Now, Trit," and Dua would swirl impatiently. "Oh, yes," said Odin. "The hard ones are quite sure of that. They have markings on the material that is sent us sometimes, and they say that it is perfectly possible to communicate by such markings. Long ago, in fact, they used markings in reverse when it was necessary to explain to the other beings how to set up their part of the positron pump." "I wonder what the other beings look like. What do they look like, do you suppose?" "From the laws, we can work out the nature of the stars, because that is simple. But how can we work out the nature of the beings? We can never know." "Couldn't they communicate what they look like?" "If we understood what they communicated, perhaps we could make out something, but we don't understand." Dua seemed aggrieved. "Don't the hard ones understand?" "I don't know. If they do, they haven't told me so. Losten once told me it didn't matter what they were like, as long as the positron pump worked and was enlarged."
"Maybe he just didn't want you bothering him,"
Odin said huffily. "I don't bother him."
"Oh, you know what I mean. He just didn't want to get into those details."
By that time, Trit could no longer listen. They went on arguing for quite a while over whether the hard ones should let Dua look at the markings or not. Dua said that she could sense what they said, perhaps. It made Trit a little angry. After all, Dua was only a soft one and not even a rational. He began to wonder if Odin was right to tell her all he did. It gave Dua funny ideas. Dua could see it made Odin angry, too. First he laughed. Then he said that an emotional couldn't handle such complicated things. Then he refused to talk at all. Dua had to be very pleasant to him for a while till he came around. On one occasion, it was Dua who was angry, absolutely furious. It began quietly. In fact, it was on one of the occasions when the two children were with them. Odin was letting them play with him. He didn't even mind when little ripe Torun pulled at him. In fact, he let himself go in most undignified fashion. He didn't seem to mind that he was all out of shape. It was a sure sign he was pleased. Trit remained in a corner, resting, and was so satisfied with what was happening. Dua laughed at Odin's misshapenness. She let her own substance touch Odin's knobbishness flirtatiously. She knew very well, Trit knew, that the leftish surface was sensitive when out of ovoid. Dua said, "I've been thinking, Odin, if the other universe gets its laws into ours just a bit through the positron pump, doesn't our universe get its laws into theirs the same little bit?" Odin howled at Dua's touch and tried to avoid her without upsetting the little ones. He gasped, "I can't answer unless you stop, you middling wretch!" She stopped, and he said, "That's a very good thought, Dua. You're an amazing creature. It's true, of course, The mixture goes both ways. Trit, take out the little ones, will you? But they scurried off by themselves. They were not such little ones. They were quite grown. Anis would soon be starting his education, and Torun was quite parentally blockish already. Trit stayed and thought Dua looked very beautiful when Odin talked to her in this way. Dua said, "If the other laws slow down our sun and cool them down, don't our laws speed up their suns and heat them up?" "Exactly right, Dua. A rational couldn't do better." "How hot do their suns get?"
"Oh, not much. Just slightly hotter, very slightly."
Dua said, "But that's where I keep getting the something bad feeling."
"Oh, well, the trouble is that their suns are so huge. If our little suns get a little cooler, it doesn't matter. Even if they turned off altogether, it wouldn't matter as long as we have the positron pump. With great huge stars, though, getting even a little hotter is troublesome. There is so much material in one of those stars that turning up the nuclear fusion even a little way will make it explode."
"Explode? But then what happens to the people?"
"What people?"
"The people in the other universe."
For a moment, Odin looked blank. Then he said, "I don't know."
"Well, what would happen if our own sun exploded?"
"It couldn't explode." Trit wondered what all the excitement was about. How could a sun explode? Dua seemed angrier, and Odin looked confused. Dua said,
"But if it did, would it get very hot?"
"I suppose so."
"Wouldn't it kill us all?"
Odin hesitated, and then said in queer annoyance, "What difference does it make, Dua? Our sun isn't exploding, and don't ask silly questions."
"You told me to ask questions, Odin, and it does make a difference, because the positron pump works both ways. We need their end as much as ours."
Odin stared at her. "I never told you that."
"I feel it."
Odin said, "You feel a great many things.
Dua..."
But Dua was shouting now. She was quite beside herself. Trit had never seen her like that. She said,
"Don't change the subject, Odin, and don't withdraw and try to make me out a complete fool, just another emotional. You said I was almost like a rational, and I'm enough like one to see that the positron pump won't work without the other beings. If the people in the other universe are destroyed, the positron pump will stop, and our sun will be colder than ever, and we'll all starve. Don't you think that's important?"
Odin was shouting too now.
"That shows what you know. We need their help because the energy supply is in low concentration, and we have to switch matter. If the sun in the other universe explodes, there'll be an enormous flood of energy, a huge flood that will last for a million lifetimes. There will be so much energy, we could tap it directly without any matter shift either way. So we don't need them, and it doesn't matter what happens."
They were almost touching now. Trit was horrified. He had better say something, make them get apart, talk to them. He couldn't think of anything to say. Then it turned out he didn't have to. There was a hard one just outside the cabin. No, three of them. They had been trying to talk, and hadn't made themselves heard.
Trit shrieked, "Odin! Dua!"
Then he remained quiet, trembling. He had a frightened notion of what the hard ones had come to talk about. He decided to leave. But a hard one put out one of his permanent opaque appendages and said, "Don't go." It sounded harsh, unfriendly. Trit was more frightened than ever. 4A. Dua was filled with anger. So filled she could scarcely sense the hard ones. She seemed stifled under the components of the anger, each one filling her to the brim separately. There was a sense of wrongness that Odin should try to lie to her, a sense of wrongness that a whole world of people should die, a sense of wrongness that it was so easy for her to learn and that she had never been allowed to. Since that first time in the rock, she had gone twice more to the hard caverns.
Twice more, unnoticed, she had buried herself in rock, and each time she sensed and knew. And each time when Odin would explain matters to her, she knew in advance what it was he would explain. Why couldn't they teach her, then, as they had taught Odin? Why only the rationals? Did she possess the capacity to learn only because she was a left M, a perverted Midland? Then let them teach her, perversion and all. It was wrong to leave her ignorant. Finally, the words of the Hard One were breaking through to her. Losten was there, but it was not he speaking. It was a strange Hard One in front who spoke. She did not know him, but she knew few of them. The Hard One said, "Which of you have been in the lower caverns recently, the Hard Caverns?" Jua was defiant. They found out about her rock rubbing, and she didn't care. Let them tell everybody. She would do so herself. She said, "I have, many times." "Alone?" said the Hard One calmly. "Alone, many times," snapped Jua. It was only 3 times, but she didn't care. Odin muttered, "I have, of course, been to the lower caverns on occasion." The Hard One seemed to ignore that. He turned to Trit instead, and said sharply, "And you, right?" Trit quavered, "Yes, Hard Sir." "Alone?" "Yes, Hard Sir." "How often?"
"Once."
Jua was annoyed. Poor Trit was in such a panic over nothing. It was she herself who had done it, and she was ready for a confrontation. "Leave him alone," she said. "I'm the one you want." The Hard One turned slowly toward her. "For what?" he said. "For whatever it is." And faced with it directly, she couldn't bring herself to describe what she had done after all. Not in front of Odin. "Well, we'll get to you. First the right. Your name is Trit, isn't it? Why did you go to the lower caverns alone?"
"To speak to Hard One Estwald, Hard Sir."
At which again Jua interrupted eagerly.
"Are you Estwald?"
The Hard One said briefly, "No." Odin looked annoyed, as though it embarrassed him that Jua didn't recognize the Hard One. Jua didn't care. The Hard One said to Trit, "What did you take from the lower caverns?" Trit was silent. The Hard One said, without emotion, "We know you took something. We want to know if you know what it was. It could be very dangerous." Trit was still silent, and Losten interposed, saying more kindly, "Please tell us, Trit. We know now it was you, and we don't want to have to be harsh." Trit mumbled, "I took a food maul." "Ah!" It was the first Hard One speaking. "What did you do with it?" And Trit burst out, "It was for Jua. She wouldn't eat. It was for Jua." Jua jumped and coalesced in astonishment. The Hard One turned on her at once. "You did not know about it?"
"No."
"Nor you?" to Odin. Odin, so motionless as to seem frozen, said, "No, Hard Sir." For a moment the air was full of unpleasant vibration as the Hard Ones spoke to each other, ignoring the triad. Whether her sessions at rock rubbing had made her more sensitive, or whether it was her recent storm of emotions, Dua couldn't tell, and wouldn't have dreamed of trying to analyze. She simply knew she was catching whiffs, not of words, but of understanding. They had detected the loss some time ago. They had been searching quietly. They had turned to the Soft Ones as possible culprits with reluctance. They had investigated, and then turned to Odin's triad with even greater reluctance. Why? Jua missed that. They did not see how Odin could have had the foolishness to take it, or Dua the inclination. They did not think of Trit at all. Then the Hard One, who had so far said not a word to the Soft Ones, recalled seeing Trit in the Hard Caverns. Of course, thought Dua, it was the day she had first entered the rock. She had sensed him then. She had forgotten. It had seemed unlikely in the extreme, but finally With all else impossible, and with the time lapse having grown intolerably dangerous, they came. They would have liked to consult Estwald, but by the time the possibility of Trit arose, he was unavailable. All this Dua sensed in a gasp, and now she turned toward Trit with a feeling of mingled wonder and outrage. Lawston was anxiously vibrating that no harm had been done, that Dua looked well, that it was a useful experiment, actually. The hard one to whom Trit had spoken was agreeing. The other still exuded concern. Dua was not paying attention to them only. She was looking at Trit. The first hard one said, "Where is the food ball now, Trit?" Trit showed them. It was hidden effectively, and the connections were clumsy but serviceable. The hard one said, "Did you do this yourself, Trit?"
"Yes, hard sir."
"How did you know how?"
"I looked at how it was done in the hard caverns. I did it exactly the way I saw it done there."
"Didn't you know you might have harmed your midmate?"
"I didn't! I wouldn't! I..."
Trit seemed unable to speak for a moment. Then he said, "It was not to hurt her, it was to feed her. I let it pour into her feeder, and I decorated her feeder. I wanted her to try it, and she did. She ate. For the first time in a long time, she ate well. We melted." He paused, then said in a huge, tumultuous cry, "She had enough energy at last to initiate a baby emotional. She took Odin's seed and passed it to me. I have it growing inside me. A baby emotional is growing inside me."
Dua could not speak. She stumbled back, and then rushed for the door in so pell-mell a fashion that the hard ones could not get out of the way in time. She struck the appendage of the one in front, passing deep into it, and then pulled free with a harsh sound. The hard one's appendage fell limp, and his expression seemed contorted with pain. Odin tried to dodge around him to follow Dua, but the hard one said, with apparent difficulty, "Let her go for now. There is enough harm done. We will take care."
4B. Odin found himself living through a nightmare. Dua was gone. The hard ones were gone. Only Trit was still there, silent. How could it have happened? Odin thought in tortured fashion. How could Trit have found his way alone to the hard caverns? How could he have taken a storage battery charged at the positron pump and designed to yield radiation in much more concentrated form than sunlight, and dared? Odin would not have had the courage to chance it. How could Trit, stumbling, ignorant Trit? Or was he unusual too? Odin, the clever rational, Dua, the curious emotional, and Trit, the daring parental. He said, "How could you do it, Trit?" Trit retorted hotly, "What did I do? I fed her. I fed her better than she had ever been fed before. Now we have a baby emotional initiated at last. Haven't we waited long enough? We would have waited forever if we had waited for Dua." "But don't you understand, Trit? You might have hurt her. It wasn't ordinary sunlight. It was an experimental radiational source that could have been too concentrated to be safe." "I don't understand what you're saying, Odin. How could it do harm? I tasted the kind of foods the hard ones made before. It tasted bad. You've tasted it too. It tasted just awful, and it never hurt us. It tasted so bad Dua wouldn't touch it. Then I came on the food ball. It tasted good. I ate some, and it was delicious. How can anything delicious hurt? You see, Dua ate it. She liked it. And it started the baby emotional. How can I have done wrong?" Odin despaired of explaining. He said, "Dua is going to be very angry. She'll get over it." "I wonder. Trit, she's not like ordinary emotionals. That's what makes her so hard to live with, but so wonderful when we can live with her. She may never want to melt with us again." Trit's outline was sturdily plain-surfaced. Then he said, "Well, what of it?" "What of it?
You ask, do you want to give up melting? No, but if she won't, she won't. I have my third baby, and I don't care anymore. I know all about the soft ones in the old days. They used to have 2 triad births sometimes, but I don't care. 1 is plenty. But Trit, babies aren't all there is to melting. What else? I heard you once say you learned faster after you melted, then learned slower. I don't care. I have my third baby. Odine turned away, trembling, and flowed jerkily out of the chamber. What was the use of scolding Trit? Trit wouldn't understand. He wasn't sure he understood himself. Once the third baby was born and grown a little, surely there would come a time to pass on. It would be he, Odine, who would have to give the signal, who would have to say when, and it would have to be done without fear. Anything else would be disgrace or worse, and yet he could not face it without melting, even now that all 3 children would have been formed. Melting, somehow, would eliminate the fear. Maybe it was because melting was like passing on. There was a period of time when you were not conscious, yet it did not hurt. It was like not existing, and yet it was desirable. With enough melting, he could gain the courage to pass on without fear and without... Oh, sun and all the stars, it wasn't passing on. Why use that phrase so solemnly? He knew the other word that was never used except by children who wanted to shock their elders somehow. It was dying. He had to get ready to die without fear, and to have Dua and Trit die with him. And he didn't know how. Not without melting. 4C. Trit remained alone in the room, frightened, but sturdily resolved to remain unmoved. He had his third baby. He could feel it within. That was what counted. That was all that counted. Yet why, then, deep inside, did he have a stubborn, faint feeling that it wasn't all that counted? 5A. Dua was ashamed almost beyond endurance. It took a long time for her to battle down that shame, battle it down enough to give herself room to think. She had hastened, moving blindly out and away from the horror of the home cavern, scarcely caring that she did not know where she was going or even where she was. It was night, when no decent soft one would be on the surface, not even the most frivolous emotional, and it would be a considerable time before the sun rose. Dua was glad. The sun was food, and at the moment she hated food and what had been done to her. It was cold, too, but Dua was only distantly aware of it. Why should she care about cold, she thought, when she had been fattened in order that she might do her duty, fattened mind and body? After that, cold and starvation were almost her friends. She saw through Trit. Poor thing, he was so easy to see through. His actions were pure instinct, and he was to be praised that he had followed them so bravely. He had come back so daringly from the hard caverns with the food ball, and she herself had sensed him, and would have known what was happening, if Trit hadn't been so paralyzed at what he was doing that he had dared not think of it. And if she had not been so paralyzed at what she was doing, and at the new depth of sensation it brought her, that she could not take care to sense what most she needed to. Trit brought it back undetected, and had arranged the pitiful booby trap, decorating her feeder to entice her. And she had come back, flushed with awareness of her rock-probing thinness, filled with the shame of it and with pity for Trit. With all that shame and pity, she ate, and helped initiate birth. Since then she had eaten but sparingly, as was her custom, and never at the feeder. But then there had been no impulse to. Trit had not driven her. He had looked contented, of course, so there was nothing to reactivate the shame. And Trit left the food ball in place. He didn't dare risk taking it back. He had what he wanted.
it was best and easiest to leave it there and think of it no more. Chili was caught. But clever Odin must have seen through Prit's plan, must have spied the new connections to the electrodes, must have understood Trit's purpose. Undoubtedly, he said nothing to Trit. That would have embarrassed and frightened the poor ripling, and Odin always watched over Trit with loving care. Of course, Odin didn't have to say anything. He needed only to fill in the gaps in Trit's clumsy plan and make it work. Dua was under no illusions now. She would have detected the taste of the food ball, noticed its extraordinary tang, caught the way in which it began to fill her while giving her no sensations of fullness, had it not been that Odin had occupied her with talk. It had been a conspiracy between the two of them, whether Trit was consciously part of it or not. How could she have believed that Odin was suddenly a careful, painstaking teacher? How could she have failed to see the ulterior motive? Their concern for her was their concern for the completion of the new triad, and that in itself was an indication of how little they thought of her. Well. She paused long enough to feel her own weariness, and she worked herself into a crevice in the rock that would shield her from the thin, cold wind. Two of the seven stars were in her field of vision, and she watched them absently, occupying her outer senses in trivia, so that she might concentrate the more in internal thought. She was disillusioned. Betrayed, she muttered to herself. Betrayed. Could they see no further than themselves? That Trit would be willing to see all destroyed if he were but secure in his babies was to be taken for granted. But he was a creature of instinct. What of Odin? Odin reasoned, and did that mean that for the purpose of exercising his reason, he would sacrifice all else? Was everything produced by reason its own excuse for being, at any cost? Because Estwald had devised the positron pump, did it have to be used in order that the whole world, hard and soft alike, be placed at its mercy, and at the mercy of the people of the other universe? What if the other people stopped? And if the world was left without a positron pump, and with a dangerously cooled sun? No, they wouldn't stop, those other people, for they had been persuaded to start, and they would be persuaded to keep going until they were destroyed. And then they would be needed no longer by the rationals, hard or soft, just as she, Dua, would have to pass on, be destroyed, now that she was needed no longer. She and the other people, both being betrayed. Almost without being aware of it, she was cushioning deeper and deeper into the rock. She buried herself, out of sight of the stars, out of touch with the wind, unaware of the world. She was pure thought. It was Estwald whom she hated. He was the personification of all that was selfish and hard. He had devised the positron pump, and would destroy a whole world of perhaps tens of thousands without conscience. He was so withdrawn that he never made his appearance, and so powerful that even the other hard ones seemed afraid of him. Well then, she would fight him. She would stop him. The people of the other universe had helped set up the positron pump through communications of some sort. Odin had mentioned those. Where would such communications be kept? What would they be like? How could they be used for further communication? It was remarkable how clearly she could think. Remarkable. There was fierce enjoyment in this, that she would use reason to overcome the cruel reasoners. They wouldn't be able to stop her, for she could go where no hard one could go, where no rational or parental could, and where no other emotional would. She might be caught eventually, but at the moment she didn't care. She was going to fight to have her way at any price, though to do it meant she would have to go through rock, live in rock, skirt the hard caverns, steal food from their stored energy batteries when she had to, flock with the other emotionals, and feed on sunlight when she could.
But in the end, she would teach them all a lesson, and after that they could do as they wished. She would even be ready to pass on then, but only then.
5b. Odine was present when the new baby Emotional was born, perfect in every way, but he had not been able to feel enthusiasm over it. Even Trit, who cared for it perfectly as a parental must, seemed subdued in his ecstasies. A long time had passed, and it was as though Dua had vanished. She had not passed on. A soft one could not pass on, except when the whole triad did. But she was not with them either. It was as though she had passed on without passing on. Odine had seen her once, only once, not very long after her wild flight on the news that she had initiated the new baby. He had passed a cluster of Emotionals sunning themselves when he was moving over the surface on some foolish notion that he might find her. They had tittered at the rare sight of a rational moving in the vicinity of an Emotional cluster, and had thinned in mass provocation, with no thought among the foolish lot of them but to advertise the fact that they were Emotionals. Odin felt only contempt for them, and there was no answering stir along his own smooth curves at all. He thought of Dua instead, and of how different she was from all of them. Dua never thinned for any reason other than her own inner needs. She had never tried to attract anyone, and was the more attractive for that. If she could have brought herself to join the flock of empty heads, she would be easily recognized, he felt sure, by the fact that she alone would not thin, but would probably thicken, precisely because the others thinned. And as he thought that, Odin scanned the stunning Emotionals, and noted that one indeed had not. He stopped, and then hastened toward her, oblivious to the Emotionals in his way, oblivious to their wild screeching as they flicked smokily out of his path and chattered desperately in their attempts to avoid coalescing one with the other, at least not in the open, and with a rational watching. It was Dua. She did not try to leave. She kept her ground and said nothing. "Dua," he said humbly, "aren't you coming home?" "I have no home, Odin," she said. Not angrily, not in hate, and all the more dreadfully for that reason. "How can you blame Trit for what he did, Dua? You know the poor fellow can't reason." "But you can, Odin, and you occupied my mind while he arranged to feed my body, didn't you? Your reason told you that I was much more likely to be trapped by you than by him." "Dua, no!" "No, what? Didn't you make a big show of teaching me, of educating me?" "I did, but it wasn't a show, it was real. And it was not because of what Trit had done. I didn't know what Trit had done." "I can't believe that." She flowed away without haste. He followed after. They were alone now, the sun shining redly down upon them. She turned to him. "Let me ask you one question, Odin. Why did you want to teach me?" Odin said, "Because I wanted to, because I enjoy teaching, and because I would rather teach than do anything else but learn." "And melt, of course. Never mind," she added to ward him off. "Don't explain that you are talking of reason and not of instinct. If you really mean what you say about enjoying teaching, if I can really ever believe what you say, then perhaps you can understand something I'm going to tell you. I've been learning a great deal since I left you, Odin. Never mind how. I have. There's no Emotional left in me at all, except physiologically. Inside, where it counts, I'm all rational, except that I hope I have more feeling for others than rational have. And one thing I've learned is what we really are, Odin. You and I and Trit and all the other triads on this planet, what we really are and always were." "What is that?" asked Odin. He was prepared to listen for as long as might be necessary, and as quietly, if only she would come back with him when she had said her say. He would perform any penance, do anything that might be required. Only she must come back. And something dim and dark inside him knew that she had to come back voluntarily.
What we are?
Why, nothing really, Odine, she said lightly, almost laughing. Isn't that strange? The hard ones are the only living species on the face of the world. Haven't they taught you that? There is only one species, because you and I, the soft ones, are not really alive. We're machines, Odine. We must be, because only the hard ones are alive. Haven't they taught you that, Odine?
But, Tua, that's nonsense, said Odine, nonplussed. Tua's voice grew harsher.
Machines, Odine, made by the hard ones, destroyed by the hard ones. They are alive, the hard ones, only they. They don't talk about it much. They don't have to. They all know it. But I've learned to think, Odine, and I've worked it out from the small clues I've had. They live tremendously long lives, but die eventually. They no longer give birth. The sun yields too little energy for that. And since they die very infrequently, but don't give birth at all, their numbers are very slowly declining. And there are no young ones to provide new blood and new thoughts, so the old, long-lived hard ones get terribly bored. So what do you suppose they do, Odine?
What?
There was a kind of fascination about this, a repulsive fascination. They manufacture mechanical children whom they can teach. You said it yourself, Odine. You would rather teach than do anything else but learn, and melt, of course. The rationals are made in the mental image of the hard ones, and the hard ones don't melt, and learning is terribly complex for them, since they already know so much. What is left for them but the fun of teaching? Rationals were created for no purpose but to be taught. Emotionals and parentals were created because they were necessary for the self-perpetuating machinery that made new rationals. And new rationals were needed constantly, because the old ones were used up, were taught all they could be taught. And when old rationals had absorbed what they could, they were destroyed, and were taught, in advance, to call the destruction process passing on, to spare their feelings. And, of course, emotionals and parentals passed on with them. As long as they had helped form a new triad, there was no further use for them.
But that's all wrong, Dua, Odine managed to say. He had no arguments to pose against her nightmare scheme, but he knew with a certainty past argument that she was wrong. Or did a little pang of doubt deep inside suggest that the certainty might have been implanted in him to begin with? No, surely no. For then would not Dua be certain with an implanted certainty, too, that this was wrong? Or was she an imperfect emotional without the proper implantations and without... Oh, what was he thinking? He was as crazy as she was. Dua said, "You look upset, Odine. Are you sure I'm all wrong? Of course, now they have the positron pump, and they now have all the energy they need, or will have. Soon they will be giving birth again. Maybe they are doing so already, and they won't need any soft-one machines at all, and we will all be destroyed. I beg pardon, we will all pass on."
"No, Dua," said Odine strenuously, as much to himself as to her. "I don't know how you got those notions, but the hard ones aren't like that. We are not destroyed."
"Don't lie to yourself, Odine. They are like that. They are prepared to destroy a whole world of other beings for their benefit, a whole universe if they have to. Would they stop at destroying a few soft ones for their comfort?"
But they made one mistake. Somehow the machinery went wrong, and a rational mind got into an emotional body. "I'm a left M. Did you know that? They called me that when I was a child, and they were right. I can reason like a rational, and I can feel like an emotional. And I will fight the hard ones with that combination." Odine felt wild. Dua must surely be mad, yet he dared not say so. He had to cajole her somehow and bring her back. He said, with strenuous sincerity, "Dua, we're not destroyed when we pass on. No? What does happen then?
I don't know. I think we enter another world, a better and happier world, and become like, well, much better than we are.
Dua laughed.
Where did you hear that? Did the hard one tell you that?
No, Dua. I'm sure that this must be so out of my own thoughts. I've been thinking a great deal about it since you left.
Dua said, Then think less and you'll be less foolish. Poor Odin. Goodbye.
She flowed away once more, thinly. There was an air of weariness about her.
Odin called out, But wait, Dua! Surely you want to see your new baby Nid?
She did not answer.
He cried out, When will you come home?
She did not answer. And he followed no more, but looked after her in deepest misery as she dwindled. He did not tell Trit he had seen Dua. What was the use? Nor did he see her again. He began haunting the favored sunning sites of the emotionals of the region, doing so even though occasional parentals emerged to watch him in stupid suspicion. Trit was a mental giant compared to most parentals. The lack of her hurt more with each passing day, and with each passing day he realized that there was a gathering fright inside himself over her absence. He didn't know why. He came back to Home Cavern one day to find Lawston waiting for him. Lawston was standing there, grave and polite, while Trit was showing him the new baby and striving to keep the handful of mist from touching the hard one. Lawston said,
It is indeed a beauty, Trit.
Gerala is its name?
Gerola, corrected Trit.
I don't know when Odin will be back. He wanders about a lot.
Here I am, Lawston, said Odin hastily.
Trit, take the baby away, there's a good fellow. Trit did so, and Lawston turned to Odin with quite obvious relief, saying, You must be very happy to have completed the triad. Odin tried to answer with some polite inconsequence, but could maintain only a miserable silence. He had recently been developing a kind of comradeship, a vague sense of equality with the hard ones, that enabled them to talk together on a level. Somehow Dua's madness had spoiled it. Odin knew she was wrong, and yet he approached Lawston once more as stiffly as in the long-gone days when he had thought of himself as a far inferior creature to them, as a machine. Lawston said, Have you seen Dua? This was a real question and not politeness. Odin could tell easily. Only once, ha! He almost said hard, sir, as though he were a child again or a parental. Only once, Lawston. She won't come home. She must come home, said Lawston softly.
I don't know how to arrange that.
Lawston regarded him somberly. Do you know what she is doing? Odin dared not look at the other. Had he discovered Dua's wild theories? What would be done about that? He made a negative sign without speaking. Lawston said, She is a most unusual emotional, Odin. You know that, don't you?
Yes, sighed Odin.
So are you in your way, and Trit in his. I doubt that any parental in the world would have had either the courage or the initiative to steal an energy battery, or the perverse ingenuity to put it to use as he did. The three of you make up the most unusual triad of which we have any record.
Thank you.
But there are uncomfortable aspects to the triad, too, things we didn't count on. We wanted you to teach Dua as the mildest and best possible way in which to cajole her into performing her function voluntarily. We did not count on Trit's quixotic action at just that moment, nor, to tell you the truth, did we count on her wild reaction to the fact that the world in the other universe must be destroyed. I ought to have been careful how I answered her questions, said Odin miserably. It wouldn't have helped. She was finding out for herself. We didn't count on that, either. Odin, I am sorry, but I must tell you this. Dua has become a deadly danger.
She is trying to stop the positron pump.
But how can she? She can't reach it. And even if she could, she lacks the knowledge to do anything about it.
Oh, but she can reach it. Losten hesitated, then said, She remains infused in the rock of the world, where she is safe from us.
It took a while for Odin to grasp the clear meaning of the words. He said, No grown emotional would... Dua would never...
She would. She does. Don't waste time arguing the point.
She can penetrate anywhere in the caverns. Nothing is hidden from her. She has studied those communications we have received from the other universe. We don't know that of certain knowledge, but there is no other way of explaining what is happening.
Oh, oh, oh.
Odin rocked back and forth, his surface opaque with shame and grief. Does Estwald know of all this?
Losten said grimly, Not yet, though he must know some day.
But what will she do with those communications?
She is using them to work out a method for sending some of her own in the other direction.
But she cannot know how to translate or transmit.
She is learning both.
She knows more about those communications than Estwald himself. She is a frightening phenomenon, an emotional who can reason and who is out of control.
Odin shivered. Out of control? How machine-like a reference.
He said, It can't be that bad.
It can.
She has communicated already, and I fear she is advising the other creatures to stop their half of the positron pump. If they do that before their sun explodes, we will be helpless at this end.
But then, she must be stopped, Odin.
But how? Are you going to blast?
His voice failed.
Dimly, he knew that the Hard One had devices for digging caverns out of the world's rock, devices scarcely used since the world's population had begun declining ages ago. Would they locate Dua in the rock and blast it and her?
No, said Losten forcefully. We cannot harm Dua.
Estwald might.
Estwald cannot harm her either.
Then what's to be done?
It's you, Odin. Only you. We're helpless, so we must depend on you.
On me? But what can I do?
Think about it, said Losten urgently. Think about it.
Think about what?
I can't say more than that, said Losten, in apparent agony. Think. There is so little time.
He turned and left, moving rapidly for a Hard One, moving as though he did not trust himself to stay and perhaps say too much. And Odin could only look after him, dismayed, confused, lost.
5C.
There was a great deal for Trick to do. Babies required much care, but even two young lefts and two young rights together did not make up the sum of a single baby nid, particularly not a nid as perfect as Darola. She had to be exercised and soothed, protected from percolating into whatever she touched, cajoled into condensing and resting. It was a long time before he saw Odin again, and actually he didn't care. Darola took up all his time. But then he came across Odin in the corner of his own alcove, iridescent with thought. Trick remembered suddenly. He said, Was Losten angry about Dua?
Odin came to himself with a start.
Losten? Yes, he was angry. Dua is doing great harm.
She should come home, shouldn't she?
Odin was staring at Trit. Trit, he said, we're going to have to persuade Dua to come home. We must find her first. You can do it. With a new baby, your parental sensitivity is very high. You can use it to find Dua.
No, said Trit, shocked.
It's used for Darola. It would be wrong to use it for Dua. Besides, if she wants to stay away so long when a baby nid is longing for her, and she was once a baby mid herself, maybe we might just learn to do without her.
But, Trit, don't you ever want to melt again?
Well, the triad is now complete.
That's not all there is to melting.
Trit said,
But where do we have to go to find her? Little Dirola needs me. She's a tiny baby. I don't want to leave her.
The Hard Ones will arrange to have Dirola taken care of. You and I will go to the Hard Caverns and find Dua.
Trick thought about that.
He didn't care about Dua. He didn't even care about Odine, somehow. There was only Dirola.
He said, Someday, when Dirola is older. Not till then.
Trit, said Odine urgently, we must find Dua. Otherwise the babies will be taken away from us.
By whom? Said Trit.
By the Hard Ones.
Trit was silent. There was nothing he could say. He had never heard of such a thing. He could not conceive of such a thing.
Odine said, Trit, we must pass on. I know why now. I've been thinking about it ever since Lostin, but never mind that. Dua and you must pass on, too. Now that I know why, you will feel you must, and I hope, I think, Dua will feel she must, too. And we must pass on soon, for Dua is destroying the world.
Trit was backing away. Don't look at me like that, Odine. You're making me...
I'm not making you, Trit, said Odine sadly. It's just that I know now, and so you must.
But we must find Dua.
No, no! Trit was in agony, trying to resist. There was something terribly new about Odine, and existence was approaching an end inexorably. There would be no Trit and no baby Nid. Where every other parental had had his baby Nid for a long time, Trit would have lost his almost at once. It wasn't fair. Oh, it wasn't fair.
Trit panted. It's Dua's fault. Let her pass on first.
Odine said with deadening calm, There's no other way but for all of us.
And Trit knew that was so. That was so. That was so.
6A. Dua felt thin and cold, wispy. Her attempts to rest in the open and absorb sunlight had ended after Odine had found her that time. Her feeding at the Hard One's batteries was erratic. She dared not remain too long outside the safety of rock, so she ate in quick gulps, and she never got enough. She was conscious of hunger continuously, all the more so since it seemed to tire her to remain in the rock. It was as though she were being punished for all that long time in which she haunted the sunset and ate so skimpily. If it were not for the work she was doing, she could not bear the weariness and hunger. Sometimes she hoped that the Hard Ones would destroy her, but only after she was finished. The Hard Ones were helpless as long as she was in the rock. Sometimes she sensed them outside the rock in the open. They were afraid. Sometimes she thought the fear was for her, but that couldn't be. How could they be afraid for her, afraid that she would pass on out of sheer lack of food, out of sheer exhaustion? It must be that they were afraid of her, afraid of a machine that did not work as they had designed it to work, appalled at so great a prodigy, struck helpless with the terror of it. Carefully she avoided them. She always knew where they were, so they could not catch her nor stop her. They could not watch all places always. She thought she could even blank what little perception they had. She swirled out of the rock and studied the recorded duplicates of the communications they had received from the other universe. They did not know that was what she was after. If they hid them, she would find them in whatever new place. If they destroyed them, it didn't matter. Dua could remember them. She did not understand them at first, but with her stay in the rocks, her senses grew steadily sharper, and she seemed to understand without understanding, Without knowing what the symbols meant, they inspired feelings within her. She picked out markings and placed them where they would be sent to the other universe. The markings were F-E-E-R. What that could possibly mean, she had no idea. But its shape inspired her with a feeling of fear, and she did her best to impress that feeling of fear upon the markings. Perhaps the other creatures, studying the markings, would also feel fear. When the answers came, Jua could sense excitement in them. She did not always get the answers that were sent. Sometimes the hard ones found them first. Surely they must know what she was doing. Still, they couldn't read the messages, couldn't even sense the emotions that went along with them. So she didn't care. She would not be stopped till she was done, whatever the hard ones found out. She waited for a message that would carry the feeling she wanted. It came. P-U-M-P-E-A-D. It carried the fear and hatred she wanted. She sent it back in extended form, more fear, more hatred. Now the other people would understand. Now they would stop the pump. The hard ones would have to find some other way, some other source of energy. They must not obtain it through the death of all those thousands of other universe creatures. She was resting too much, declining into a kind of stupor within the rock. Desperately she craved food and waited so that she could crawl out. Even more desperately than she wanted the food in the storage battery, she wanted that storage battery to be dead. She wanted to suck the last bit of food out of it and know that no more would come, and that her task was done. She emerged at last, and remained recklessly long, sucking in the contents of one of the batteries. She wanted to withdraw its last, empty it, see that no more was entering, but it was an endless source, endless, endless. She stirred and drew away from the battery in disgust. The positron pumps were still going, then. Had her messages not persuaded the other universe creatures to stop the pumps? Had they not received them? Had they not sensed their meaning? She had to try again. She had to make it plain beyond plain. She would include every combination of signals that to her seemed to carry the feeling of danger. Every combination that would get across the plea to stop. Desperately, she began to fuse the symbols into metal, drawing without reserve on the energy she had just sucked out of the battery, drawing on it till it was all gone, and she was more weary than ever. Pump, not, stop, not, stop, we, not, stop, pump, we, not, here, danger, not, here, not, here, you, stop, please, stop, you, stop, so, we, stop, please, you, stop, danger, 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 stop, stop, you, stop, pump. It was all she could do. There was nothing left in her but a racking pain. She placed the message where it could be transferred, and she did not wait for the hard ones to send the message unwittingly. Through an agonizing haze, she manipulated the controls as she had seen them do, finding the energy for it somehow. The message disappeared, and so did the cavern in a purple shimmer of vertigo. She was passing on out of sheer exhaustion. Odin Trip 6B. Odin came. He had been flowing faster than ever he had flowed before. He had been following Trit's sharp new baby sense perception, but now he was close enough for his own blunter senses to detect her nearness. He could, on his own account, feel the flickering and fading consciousness of Dua, and he raced forward while Trit did his best to clump along, gasping and calling, "Faster! Faster!" Odin found her in a state of collapse, scarcely alive, smaller than he had ever seen an adult emotion. "Trit," he said, "bring the battery here. No, no, don't try to carry her. She's too thin to carry. Hurry. If she sinks into the floor..." The hard ones began to gather. They were late, of course, with their inability to sense other life forms at a distance. If it had depended only on them, it would have been too late to save her. She would not have passed on. She would truly have been destroyed, and more than she knew would have been destroyed with her. Now, as she was slowly gathering life out of the energy supply, the hard ones stood silently near them. Odine rose, a new Odine who knew what was happening, exactly. Imperiously, he ordered them away with an angry gesture, and they left, silently, without objection. Dua stirred. Trit said, "Is she all right, Odine?" "Quiet, Trit," said Odine. "Dua?" "Odine." She stirred, spoke in a whisper. "I thought I had passed on." "Not yet, Dua, not yet. But first you must eat and rest."
"Is Trit here, too?"
"Here I am, Dua," said Trit.
"Don't try to bring me back," said Dua. "It's over. I've done what I wanted to do. The positron pump will stop soon, I'm sure. The hard ones will continue to need soft ones, and they will take care of you two, or at least the children."
Odin didn't say anything. He kept Trit from saying anything either. He let the radiation pour slowly into Dua. Very slowly. He stopped at times to let her rest a bit, then he started again. She began to mutter, "Enough, enough." Her substance was writhing more strongly. Still he fed her. Finally he spoke. He said, "Dua, you were wrong. We are not machines. I know exactly what we are. I would have come to you sooner if I had found out earlier. But I didn't know till Lawson begged me to think, and I did, very hard. And even so, it is almost premature." Dua moaned, and Odin stopped for a while. He said, "Listen, Dua, there is a single species of life. The hard ones are the only living things in the world. You gathered that, and so far you were right. But that doesn't mean the soft ones aren't alive. It merely means we are part of the same single species. The soft ones are the immature forms of the hard ones. We are first children as soft ones, then adults as soft ones, then hard ones. Do you understand?" Trit said in soft confusion, "What? What?" Odin said, "Not now, Trit, not now. You'll understand too, but this is for Dua." He kept watching Dua, who was gaining opalescence. He said, "Listen, Dua, whenever we melt, whenever the triad melts, we become a hard one. The hard one is 3-in-1, which is why he is hard. During the time of unconsciousness in melting, we are a hard one. But it is only temporary, and we can never remember the period afterward. We can never stay a hard one long. We must come back. But all through our life we keep developing, with certain key stages marking it off. Each baby born marks a key stage. With the birth of the third, the emotional, there comes the possibility of the final stage, where the rational's mind by itself, without the other two, can remember those flashes of hard-won existence. Then, and only then, you can guide a perfect melt that will form the hard-won forever, so that the triad can live a new and unified life of learning and intellect. I told you that passing on was like being born again. I was groping then for something I did not quite understand, but now I know." Dua was looking at him, trying to smile. She said, "How can you pretend to believe that, Odin? If that were so, wouldn't the hard ones have told you long ago, told all of us?" "They couldn't, Dua. There was a time, long ages ago, when melting was just a putting together of the atoms of bodies. But evolution slowly developed minds. Listen to me, Dua. Melting is a putting together of the minds, too, and that's much harder, much more delicate. To put it together properly and permanently, just so, the rational must reach a certain pitch in development. That pitch is reached when he finds out, for himself, what it's all about. When his mind is finally keen enough to remember what has happened in all those temporary unions during melting. If the rational were told, that development would be aborted, and the time of the perfect melt could not be determined. The hard one would form imperfectly. When Losten pleaded with me to think, he was taking a great chance. Even that may have been... I hope not. For it's especially true in our case, Thea. For many generations, the hard ones have been combining triads with great care to form particularly advanced hard ones, and our triad was the best they'd ever obtained. Especially you, Dua. Especially you. Losten was once the triad whose baby mid you were. Part of him was your parental. He knew you. He brought you to Trip and me. Dua sat up. Her voice was almost normal. Odin, are you making all this up to soothe me? Trit broke in. No, Dua, I feel it too. I feel it too. I don't know what exactly, but I feel it. He does, Dua, said Odin. You will too. Aren't you beginning to recall being a hard one during our melt? Don't you want to melt now? One last time? One last time? He lifted her. There was a feverishness about her, and though she struggled a bit, she was thinning. If what you say is true, Odin, she gasped, if we are to be a hard one, then it seems to me you are saying we'll be an important one. Is that so? The most important, the best who was ever formed. I mean that, Trit over there. It's not goodbye, Trit. We'll be together as we always wanted to be. Dua, too. You too, Dua. Dua said, then we can make Estwald understand the pump can't continue. We'll force. The melting was beginning. One by one, the hard ones were entering again at the crucial moment. Odin saw them imperfectly, for he was beginning to melt into Dua. It was not like the other times. No sharp ecstasy, just a smooth, cool, utterly peaceful movement. He could feel himself become partly Dua, and all the world seemed pouring into his-her sharpening senses. The positron pumps were still going. He-she could tell. Why were they still going? He was Trit, too, and a keen, sharp sense of bitter loss filled his-her his mind. Oh, my babies! And he cried out, one last cry under the consciousness of Odin, except that somehow it was the cry of Dua. No, we can't stop Estwald. We are Estwald. We! The cry that was Dua's and yet not Dua's stopped, and there was no longer any Dua. Nor would there ever be Dua again, nor Odin, nor Trip. 7 ABC. Estwald stepped forth and said sadly to the waiting hard ones, by way of vibrating airways, I am permanently with you now, and there is much to do. 3. Contend in vain. 1. Selene Lindstrom smiled brightly and walked with the light, springy touch that was startling when first seen by the tourists, but was soon recognized as having a grace of its own. It's time for lunch, she said cheerfully. All homegrown, ladies and gentlemen. You may not be used to the taste, but it's all nourishing. Right here, sir. You won't mind sitting with the ladies, I know. One moment. There will be seat for all. Sorry, there will be a choice on the beverage, but not on the main course. That will be veal. No, no. Artificial flavor and texture, but it's really quite good. Then she sat down herself with a slight sigh and an even slighter wavering of her pleasant expression. One of the group sat down across from her. Do you mind? he asked. She looked at him quickly, penetrating. She had the faculty of making quick judgments, of course, and he did not seem troublesome. She said, "Not at all, but aren't you with someone in this group?" He shook his head. "No, I'm alone. Even if that were not the case, Earthies are no great thrill to me." She looked at him again. He was 50-ish, and there was a weary look about him which only his bright, inquisitive eyes seemed to belie. He had the unmistakable look of the Earthman, laden down with gravity. She said, "Earthy is a moon expression, and not a very nice one." "I'm from Earth," he said, "so I can use it without offense, I hope, unless you object." Celine shrugged as though to say, "Please yourself." She had the faintly oriental look about the eyes so many of the moon girls had, but her hair was the color of honey, and her nose was prominent. She was undeniably attractive, without being in any way classically beautiful. The Earthman was staring at the nameplate she wore on the blouse covering the upper slope of her high, not too large, left breast. She decided it was really the nameplate he was looking at, not the breast, though the blouse was semi-transparent when it caught the light at a particular angle, and there was no garment beneath it. He said, "Are there many Selenes here?" "Oh, yes, hundreds, I think. Also Cynthia's, Diana's, and Artemis's. Selene is a little tiresome. Half the Selenes I know are called Silly, and the other half Lena." "Which are you?" "Either. I am Selene, all three syllables. Selene," she said, coming down heavily on the first syllable, "to those who use my first name at all." There was a small smile on the Earthman's face that sat there, as though he weren't quite used to it. He said, "And what if anyone asks you if you sell any, Selene?" "They never ask me that again," she said firmly. "But they do ask you. There are fools always." End of side 4. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.